Support for today's episode comes from Maple Leaf Foods. We all have questions about the food we cook. Is it natural? Is it good for my family? What about the planet? Maple Leaf's answer is in the foods they're proud to provide, with natural ingredients for Canadian families.
Okay.
Okay.
Should we start?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Well, welcome. We're at the Daily Bread Kitchen here. It's one of the lesser known aspects of the Daily Bread operation here. So many people are familiar with the food bank, the food sorting aspect to it, the large warehouse, but many people don't know that tucked away in the back of the building here, we have this large production kitchen. So today we have a staff.
I'm at the Daily Bread Food Bank's industrial kitchen in the suburbs of Toronto, Ontario. Chef Mike Greenberg is giving me a tour. Today, we're making soup.
Start working on the next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should we walk into the kitchen?
Hi, I'm Sarah Martin, and this is Home Cooked, a podcast about cherished family recipes and why they get passed on. Today's episode is about a recipe that changes with the times. It was designed that way. It starts with two ingredients and can become whatever you need, depending on what you have on hand and how many people you have around your table. And in this case, that can be anywhere from 5 to 5,000.
Back of the building here, we have this large production kitchen. We have about 5,000 square feet of kitchen space here. Yeah, so
the Daily Bread production kitchen is tucked away at the back of the warehouse. It's one of Toronto's largest food donation sorting facilities. This is where Chef Mike and his small team cook meals, thousands of them, every week to send out across the city to people in need.
I mean, 5,000 meals sounds like it's this completely insurmountable kind of achievement. It's just another day at the office for us. We do that every week, and it's surprisingly manageable for us to do.
This old warehouse is a brick building with a punched-up roof. The ceiling is lined with long, horizontal metal pane windows. Dusty rays of sunshine stream in on an angle from above, reflecting off a sea of stainless steel in this kitchen.
I think cooking is the same no matter where you are, whether you're like cooking really like basic food or whether you're working in a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. Like it's just, the fundamentals are exactly the same. It's kind of how it's been.
This place used to be an ammunition factory during the Second World War.
So what we're making today is a recipe that I got from my grandmother. And she gave me this recipe ages ago, and it sat in my personal recipe book. And I never really used it because I never needed to.
Okay. Let's get cooking.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Cool. Like I have to peel some potatoes and stuff. Radio.
That is some fast peeling.
Yeah. You know how many potatoes I've peeled in my career? A lot. We have made an effort over the last little while to make our recipes very seasonal. We've noticed that produce prices and raw ingredients costs have been changing incredibly rapidly, especially in the off-season. Produce has kind of gone to the moon, what with seasonal issues, supply and demand issues, droughts, wildfires, all those kinds of things have made certain ingredients incredibly costly. So we've created menus that are mindful of that so that we can use recipes that are a little more cost effective, depending on what season we're making them in. It's only as good as your potato peeler.
Every Thursday night, Mike's kitchen team hosts a community meal here. And tonight, his grandma's soup is on the menu.
That's it. Very well. Okay.
They look beautiful.
I can also use this.
This isn't where Mike Greenberg learned to be a chef. Before coming to Daily Bread, he really did cook at a Michelin star restaurant.
So was there like a moment when you were like, I'm going to be a chef?
Yeah. I mean, I went to cooking school in Italy, and I had a really cool time there, whatever. And then I was working in Belgium at a restaurant. My chef gave me my final month's pay, which was 600 euros a month. I worked 90 hours a week. He knew I was going to Stockholm. He said, take this money and just spend it all at one meal at a restaurant called Bonjak. And he said, just do it. Just go and do it. Enjoy yourself. So we went out for dinner, and we got a reservation there. The chef knew I was coming because he was friends with the chef I worked with in Antwerp. And we showed up to this meal, and we had this, like, absolutely, like, stunning meal. And, like, I'd never been to two Michelins at a restaurant. It just, like, totally blew my mind. Like, it took food to, like, a level I didn't even know was there. And it's just, like, it was perfection on, like, absolutely every level. And I walked away from that meal, like, just totally a different person. I was like, holy, this is, like, nuts. Like, what I thought was, like, really good, it was, like, nothing. Like, this is the next level thing, right? But to this date, like, that was the pivotal moment where everything just, like, totally just changed my whole world.
When Mike moved back to Toronto in the early 2000s, he helped establish a couple of restaurants on Ossington Avenue, Union, and later Côte de Bœuf. It made sense that Mike ended up there. He grew up in this neighborhood. But the auto body shops, hardware stores, and even his great-grandparents' butcher shop, just a couple blocks away, are all gone now. Now, you'll find jewelry shops, restaurants and breweries, interior design, and vintage fashion. When Mike became head butcher at Côte de Bœuf, you could say it was in his blood.
All of them worked at the family butcher shop, so they all became kind of lifers in the meat industry. My grandmother went a different path. I mean, at the time, a career in meat sales and butchery wasn't really something a young woman would do. My great uncle Hoshi and my uncle Louis, they started working for Canada Packers, and they were working, and they knew all of the guys in the city, you know, Yitz's and Shopsy and Schwartz, and they literally would always sit around and talk about all these connections and stuff, because I mean, I guess the world of kosher butchery and deli in Toronto wasn't that big, right? So everybody kind of knew each other.
Côte de Bœuf was cool. Ossington was humming. It was 2019.
So how do you go from working on one of the trendiest restaurant strips in the city now to leading up this operation?
Yeah, I mean, the last few years have been, like, absolutely transformative to the food industry here. I mean, people had to pivot very quickly. They had to completely change their restaurant concepts. Many of the restaurants didn't survive. Some of them had to really kind of reinvent themselves. I was no different. I was working at Côte de Bœuf. I was doing freelance work for large companies. I was doing all sorts of projects, corporate stuff. And when COVID hit, like, it literally, everything dried up. Everything got put on hold. I lost all my work. I stopped working at the restaurant. I had a 3-month-old son at home, so I became a stay-at-home father for a year. You know, I mean, it totally turned everything on its head. And that's where all of a sudden, and then I took a really short contract here at Daily Bread once I got some vaccines in me to get out of the house. And then I led into this job. So, I mean, I think everybody in the food industry across, I mean, everyone's kind of had to kind of reinvent themselves some way. It was, and it still is, a really tough time.
Here at the Daily Bread Food Bank kitchen, Mike has to do more with less, just like his grandmother did a couple generations back.
What this recipe is it's a very, very basic potato and onion soup. And she referred to it as emergency soup.
Mike's grandmother grew up in the Great Depression.
And if you are living in a state of emergency, so to speak, and you don't have anything really, it's just a very, very stripped down recipe so that you can, if nothing more, you know, sustain yourself until such times that you have better access to food. So the recipe in itself is very, very scaled down. And it can be altered in any way. And it's literally like stone soup, you know? It's a basis of onion and potato. And if you have some cabbage, you throw that in as well. What it is it's almost like a hope for a better time, right? I'm going to chop my potatoes. And once again, it's going to be a pureed soup, so not a whole lot has to happen.
Mike tells me about his grandmother.
Describe her to me. What did she look like? What was she like for someone who'd never met her?
She was a very, very gentle, very open-minded, and I'd say progressive old Jewish lady. You know, even at 94 years old, she went to school to learn how to use computers and her cell phone and would text me things like OMG and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I always found it amazing that, like, even at, you know, a lot of people would say, I'm old enough that I don't need to learn all that new technology now. Like, it's lost on me. But she was always just, like, continuing to learn and adapt. And she'd been widowed for, I guess, 40 or 50 years by the time she ultimately died. But she called me every night, and I called her often, and she always would sit and listen, and she was definitely somebody who was very special.
Why were you so close?
I don't know. I think we shared something just with the cooking. I think there was that aspect to it.
So, like, in a way, you're the custodian of this recipe, or?
Yeah, I'm the custodian. I don't think any of my cousins or anyone else really cared for her recipes, apart from, you know, knowing that there was some good stuff.
And Mike has taken good care of them, preserving her handwritten recipes in a book he flips through in the kitchen's small back office.
And this is what she calls emergency soups, old-fashioned potato soup. So it requires 4 large potatoes, water to cover, salt, pepper, chicken cubes, those bouillon cubes, if you can afford them, carrots, which are optional, and you cook it till it's tender, and then it could be laid out a little bit better, grandma.
I've heard people say they didn't notice the lines at food banks before the pandemic, but now they're everywhere. 1 in 10 people now rely on food banks in the Greater Toronto Area. That's twice as many as the year before, 5 times as many as before the pandemic.
And the soup is quite simply a very basic vegetable soup. It's a potato and onion soup, and it has the ability to be altered any different way. So if you have some meat scraps, you can throw those in. If you have meat broth, if you have additional vegetables, spices, herbs, you can take the soup in any direction that you want. There you have it. I don't really want to brown them fully. I'm just trying to soften them up, build a little bit of flavor. It's particularly important if you're keeping it to literally just onions and potato, because you want to build as much flavor as you can. A way to do that is to caramelize the onions a little bit, but I also don't want to darken it too much because it'll make the soup kind of dark. But
life is so expensive now, even people with full-time jobs depend on food banks.
A little bit of this. Just sweat that out a little bit.
So there's something about Mike deploying his grandma's Depression-era soup. It's been here before. It's done this kind of heavy lifting.
What does that mean, sweat that out?
You just kind of cook them so that the liquid starts coming out of the onions. Just kind of get all the flavors to marry. Some of the oils are going to come out of the rosemary, start to become a little more aromatic, and just kind of build up some of that flavor. Everything is about just building layers of flavor. Even in a soup that's literally potatoes and, not much else.
Can you smell that? Thankfully, Mike has more than just potatoes to work with today. There's rosemary and some zucchini. He has a lot on hand from the donations this week. Ingredients aren't as scarce as they were for his grandma. Mike's challenge is scale.
Yeah, so these are steam jacketed kettles, and they're just basically large pots that are heated with steam. And in every, I think they're about 60 gallons. So we can get about 800 servings max out of one kettle. So that means that if we want to do 5,000 servings of food in a week, we have to have 5 of these or 6 of them a week. So we need to have 2 a day over 3 days minimum to get our numbers there.
A day. And could you fit inside that pot, you yourself?
Yeah, I could fit inside of it, yeah.
And how tall are you?
I'm 6'3".
Yeah, so it's a pretty big putt.
Yeah, I think probably two of us could fit in there if we curled up in a ball.
800 servings a pot, 5,000 servings a week, and counting. These are the kind of numbers you throw around when you work in a large production kitchen like this one.
So it's a lovely environment to work in, and we have a lot of really great space to be creative and to get a lot of work done. Randy's getting the meal prepared for tonight. So we have this back prep area. She's going through some ground chicken, it looks like.
The ground chicken is for a different dish, chili. Anne is in charge of that. She's Mike's assistant.
My very first day, that was when I met Mike. So Mike was trying to make me comfortable, and he was just gisting and talking, and I was just laughing all through, you know, and I forgot all my worries and all that. So I was like,
Mike and Anne worked together easily, seamlessly.
It sounds like when you first met Mike, you just, there was something.
I like this place because they help a lot. Like, they give resources and all that. So Mike was jovial, he was friendly, and he was talking to me as if we've met in another world before, right?
Yeah, we're buddies. Like, we've always liked working together. We've always had a very, like, easygoing relationship, and we have fun together. We enjoy cooking.
When she first started coming to the Daily Bread Food Bank, Anne was in a bad place. She was living in a women's shelter with her baby boy. She had just left her abusive husband.
How did you get away from him?
It was a personal decision. Like, you're going through abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, financial abuse and all that. So it was really affecting my mental health. So I was receiving sessions with therapists, with family service Toronto and all that. So they told me, if you know you're not safe, like, you know you can't continue this with this episode, it's rather you call. They gave me the number to call and get a safe place for me and my little kid. So that was how, you know, it was a determination, like, enough is enough. I need to be the mother of my kids, right? So
it sounds like you were in a really difficult situation.
It
you
was.
Were running from, you were in a shelter, you were looking after
no
your
status.
Son.
Yeah, I had no status. Things were really difficult. I wasn't eligible for OW, nothing. Yeah, so I was just there. Whatever food they give to us is what I'm going to eat and all that.
But then why were you volunteering at that time? Why did you have...
Okay, yeah, so volunteering is like me getting out of my stress, my trouble, my problems and all that. So talking to someone is a therapy on its own. Sitting down alone without talking to people makes you go crazy, right? Thinking of shitty stuff. So I feel like coming out and talking to people, receiving the fresh air and all that, like, to just clear my memory, like, to be sane. So
her first stint here was handing out food in the cavernous distribution center. But being in that big public space made her nervous.
So when I was working there, they don't want me to leave. But I wasn't feeling comfortable seeing people of my race because we have a strong community in my country. So probably one person or the other might see me and say, oh, I know this girl. I know your husband, you know, stuff like that. That's going to be so scary and for my safety. So I was not feeling comfortable. So yeah. Can
you describe? Anne is still hiding from her abusive ex. That's why we changed her name and distorted her voice.
You know, so I had to speak up, like, is it okay if you guys have kitchen? Because I know not everybody will come into the kitchen. So they said, yes, we do have a kitchen. So when I came in and I saw that only staff are allowed to come into the kitchen, so I was like, okay, I think I'm safe here. So yeah, so they took me in, and the food is really good, you know. Food is like life and all that. The way they handle food, they respect food and all that. They're really clean. So yeah, I said, no, this is where I have to be, because I also love making food.
Anne had lots of practice cooking for her large family back home. So when a volunteer position opened up in the kitchen, Anne was a natural fit. We'll come back to her after this short break. This is where we normally host an ad from our sponsor, Maple Leaf Foods. And we'd talk about something like how Maple Leaf Foods is the world's first major carbon neutral food company, or how they're Canada's largest provider of poultry raised without antibiotics. But we're not going to do that. Home Cooked is about food and family. And today in Canada, more and more families are struggling to access food. So today, we're going to use this ad spot to talk to Sarah Stern instead.
I'm Sarah Stern, and I'm the Executive Director of the Maple Leaf Center for Food Security.
Sarah, tell me if you can, what does being food insecure in Canada look like?
I think so often when people think of food insecurity, they think of the lines outside the food bank. And no one wants to be in that line. And I think when we talk to people and try to understand why are people who are food insecure not using a food bank, what is that barrier? Most people say it's not for me, it's for someone that's worse off. And so there's a bit of a barrier there on who needs it. If you're walking around a city right now or even a community, you'll see the demographic of people in those lines are changing as they get longer. And when you speak to people at food banks, some of the biggest growing groups of people accessing food banks are those that are employed. People are having a hard time making ends meet. And the only piece of flexible income you really have is your food budget. And so that's what's getting pinched by everybody right now. And for some, it's meant having to turn to emergency food or the food bank to meet those needs.
Thanks, Sarah. Now back to the show. For ages, restaurant kitchens have been run like the military. Hierarchical. Strict. Yes, chef. Right? But the pandemic changed all that. Staff had to bond together, protect each other, all of them equally cut off from doing the one thing they loved most, serving people. So when Mike ended up at the Daily Bread, he formed a kitchen family of his own.
So when I got to the kitchen, I saw how big it is, the equipment and all that, and how friendly all the staffs are. So I was like, I think this is where I belong. So this is another family I never knew I had.
Mike, Anne, Randy, and the rest of the small team in this kitchen got to finally get back to serving again. And there were so many people to serve.
When she came and started working with us, like, she immediately kind of latched on to our group here, and I think we kind of latched on to her. And we all got along great, and she felt like she was a part of the team. And, you know, true to her word, she was here as much as she could be, 3, 4, 5 days a week. And she just kind of had a knack for cooking. Like, she didn't have any experience professionally, but she was amazing with a knife. You should see her. She was just like hammering away. And I remember thinking to myself, like, slow down, please. Like, you're scaring me. But she was amazing. And she just really embraced the job here. So yeah, it worked out great for her. She was getting to the point where it wasn't sustainable any longer to volunteer all the time. She needed a job. She was running out of resources. So we offered her a job and she was over the moon. She got a job working with us. It would help stabilize her, help get her PR and her, you know, her housing situation figured out.
And I was kind of shocked, like, what kind of person is this? He related with me as if I was part of his family. Like, I just came and appeared like, yeah, hey, brother, I'm here, you know, just like that. And they all took me in, not just only him, the former boss, Matt, was also helpful, and Etiel, Mary Dell, and all, you know, all the staffs, they were super good.
So you found a, you found like a little whole, family
yeah,
over
family,
here.
Family, yes. Like a family reunion.
I can't imagine being in a shelter. I also can't imagine that my first thought when I got into a shelter would be, how can I volunteer and how can I find the place to volunteer?
Yeah.
But you guys are all pretty matter of fact. Like, you're like, yeah, we're here, we do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she was in a shelter for a year, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to keep yourself busy. You have to, you know, to persevere. What are you going to do? You're going to sit at home? And back to her tenacity, I think, like, she needed to be busy and she needed to be out and figuring out the city that she lived in and networking and trying to kind of meander her way through all of like the obstacles in her life. And the way that she did that was she got up and at them and she took the bull by the horns and just trudged forward. So, yeah, no, I mean, as I say, just an absolutely amazing story of just like perseverance and and fortitude, like I said. I mean, yeah, she's like a absolute monster when it comes to just trudging on. Like, she's really amazing.
The perseverance and fortitude of women in tough times, it's a theme in Mike's life.
But it says to saute onions in oil or butter until browned. Add flour to make a paste. I'm not doing that. I'm using a puree to thicken it. Cook until brown. Don't burn. Add the onions and potatoes and cook until done. If the soup is too thick, add water and season to taste. So quite literally, it's just a very basic soup. And they're actually using some sort of aromatic roux, as it's called, to thicken it. So that, I guess, gives you the option to use even less potatoes. So if, say, you need to make a soup that's not watery, and you don't have a lot of potatoes to thicken it to like a proper form using a puree, you can use roux, which is even cheaper. Yeah, I mean, it's just another day at the office. Whether you're cooking foie gras or peeling potatoes, I mean, it's really kind of the same thing, truthfully. I never really loved plating food with tweezers and stuff. I mean, I think
that Mike doesn't make a big fuss. He acts like it's no big deal. Well, I'm here to say it is a big deal. The scale is staggering.
Yeah, so I'm going to get this simmering. It's going to take a little while to cool off a bit, to soften up. I'm going to puree it, and then I think people mostly start arriving at about quarter after, maybe about 5 o'clock. The volunteers. Randy does a huddle where he tells everybody, because, you know, it's in theory new people at the time, so he always tells people what to expect, how...
Randy runs the show. He makes sure everyone and everything is where it needs to be for the community meal on Thursday nights.
So how it's going to work is 5:30, the doors will open. There'll be people that will come in from the Welcome Center, and there'll be people, usually with cars, that will come in from this door.
Amna will... Between 50 and 60 people show up.
So we have a lot of really interesting people from our community, a lot of students from Humber, seniors, families with young children. It's a really amazing group of people, and we have a lot of different people from different walks of life who get to come in here and enjoy a beautiful meal with our friends and our family and our staff here.
One of the really special things about the community meal is that it's served restaurant style. Volunteers take orders on notepads. Every table has a vase with a few flowers in it. The lineup starts early, and right now, one of the volunteers is crouched on the floor, writing out today's menu on a sandwich board, starting with a very simple, hearty soup that Chef Mike has eaten his whole life.
Forever, but I see it differently. I think that I can bring these back to life, and if I can remember how the thing tasted and looked, I can make it again.
And once a server, you're assigned to a table, you'll take the order of the clients and bring it into the kitchen. And it's a very simple system. You just ask the clients if they want the meat version or the vegetarian version. There will be a big sort of rush at the beginning. A lot of people arrive right at 5:30.
I just want to make it really nice and smooth. It is going to get. Soup is it's relatively thick, which is good because I need it to. I'm going to thin it out with a little bit of milk, so it's a little thicker than it should be, which is perfect.
Soup. Mike's soup smells good.
It's simmering away, Randy. Yeah, certainly when you're cooking for people in a restaurant, you do anything necessary to make it good, and that involves salt, butter. I don't really care about other people's health when I'm cooking in a fancy restaurant. Really what's important is that it just tastes amazing and people walk away, you know, people walk away saying this is amazing rather than, well, that was healthy, right? So I think a lot of chefs, when they're cooking for other people, have a tendency to, you know, be a little less considerate about the health aspects of some of the dishes they're making. Certainly here, I have to be very mindful. I mean, like I said, we have people who have all sorts of intolerances, people who have high blood pressure. I mean, we're serving food to members of a vulnerable community, so we have to be a little more mindful. Keep things a little undersalted. Try to keep our sodium levels down, our sugar levels down. We have to keep that in mind.
Can I try it?
Yeah, I'd like to try it. That's amazing.
There you go.
That's so good.
That's your soup.
Wow.
Not as good as mine. Mine is just, you know.
There you go.
Nice, eh?
Oh, look, That's the stone soup we were talking about, right?
It's almost the opposite of an emergency.
It's like, you know, like life-saving soup, right? Yeah. So, I'm going to stir this. And like I said, it's just a kind of a potato soup. This is going to be enjoyed by 60 people.
Everyone shows up on time. It's 5:30, and the winter sun is beginning to sit low, streaming in the windows. Students, mothers with their children, elderly people, a group of male friends, a young person still dressed in a suit. Everyone is seated by a volunteer, and almost no one sits alone.
The meals are always good. It's always a different meal every week. But coming here and trying it, I was like, wow, this is really good. Plus, it's in the community, it's not far. And so many people come here, and you get to meet so many different people.
The food is great, and the kids like to interact, and they'll also like to put toys in the front.
And it's open to anybody in our community, or anybody for that matter. You know, it's a really amazing, group of people. And it's just really good vibes. Everyone's having a good time together, sitting together, eating together. Kids are playing, kids are coloring. Families, you know, if you have children and you want to go out for dinner, it costs a lot of money.
You're welcome. So vegetarian and a chicken. I'll be back for two more chicken, right?
Only one.
One chicken, please.
Got it?
Yeah. So I need two.
Good feelings aside, Mike never loses sight of who this kitchen is for and what they're doing here, providing good food in a clean, warm environment. They're also preserving dignity, one plate of food at a time. But he's worried. Food banks are meant to be stopgaps, not permanent solutions.
Here at Daily Bread, things are not returning to normal very quickly. I don't think the forecast is very optimistic. I mean, we're seeing more people than ever show up at our food bank every day. We've increased service from 5 days a week. We're open 7 days a week now. Our agency orders are going to the moon. The food cost is so high that a lot of meal programs or agencies around the city have kind of outsourced their food operations onto us because they, you know, to hire somebody to buy the ingredients to cook for your clients is crazy expensive, right? So we're seeing a ton of change in the industry, and some of it is positive and a lot of it is negative. I mean, at some point, we might not be able to operate the way we have been. We might have to say, we can't do this anymore. And we're doing everything in our power to make sure that doesn't happen, but we've seen our client business quadruple in 3 years. I mean, in three more years, our number's gonna quadruple. That would be 1 million people a month, you know, using food banks at the current kind of trajectory. So we're all kind of just waiting and seeing and hoping for the best. But nonetheless, we're gonna be here, and we're gonna be working with our community, and we're gonna be helping people. And we're gonna do everything in our power to make sure that everybody, you know, gets the resources they need.
It's very good. It's delicious. It's warm. It's filling. It's very filling, yeah.
Yeah.
You could use that for a turkey.
Definitely. Why would you try it?
You know, really what it comes down to is we just have to be adaptive. We have to kind of roll with the punches. Sometimes things are unaffordable, and we have to omit them from our recipes, or we have to maybe change the quantities in which we use them in a recipe. So we need to be prepared for any inevitabilities these days, because it's not always safe to assume any longer that in the summertime we're going to have, you know, lettuce, right? I mean, these kinds of things are subject to droughts and crop failures and whatever. I mean, there was a time when we could almost guarantee that in certain seasons we had an abundance of whatever ingredient that was. That's no longer the case. So we need to be a little bit more flexible, and we need to basically be able to have a little bit of ability to kind of change recipes as needed so that we can kind of meet our goals and keep within our budgets.
Mike sounds a lot like his own grandma. She made this soup to be flexible, to change with the times. What do you think your grandma would have thought about these compliments on her soup?
She would have been thrilled. She always just loved cooking for people, and she kind of, like I, kind of lived for just kind of keeping people happy and feeding them. And I know that she'd be really, really proud, and she'd probably be very just impressed that, you know, such an ordinary soup from such a period long ago kind of has made a resurgence. I think she'd probably also be frightened by that slightly, because it's born out of necessity and out of a period of, you know, a very tumultuous time. But I know that she'd be happy. She's probably smiling down somewhere and just knowing that we've given this recipe new life.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Home Cooked. If you want to try Mike's grandma's soup for yourself, head over to homecookedpodcast.com for the recipe. That's homecookedpodcast, all one word, .com. You'll also see photographs by acclaimed Canadian portrait photographer Rita Leisner. This episode of Home Cooked was produced by Lisa Gabriel, Nicole Edwards, and me. Sean Liliani composed original music. Sound design is by Cam McIver. Charlotte Fissick created all of the beautiful artwork and downloadable recipe cards. Dan Misha Goldman and Sean Brody composed our theme music. Candace Craig does graphics and web design. Please get in touch if you have a recipe to share. Until next time, thanks for listening.